What's up, everyone? If you are like me and some of my friends, you know, wine can be a little bit intimidating. And I am here to tell you to get rid of that intimidation or that fear of walking into an exclusive wine store. We brought in an absolute expert and boss about wine, about business. Rick Planbeck, a friend of mine, has the best wine store in Omaha, voted. True, I'm not lying. Voted here in Omaha for 4 years in a row. Old Vine Wine and Spirits out on 168th and Maple. It is absolutely a gem, folks. And I wanted to bring you an inside look on the inner workings of who makes it all happen. You are going to go in a depth dive with this gentleman and find out how he got to where he's at. Not only is it a wine store, it's an experience. They have wine tastings, they have wine clubs, they have vintners that are coming in and showcasing wine. They have e-commerce footprint, and they're even plan for the future with a bigger vision to better serve the Omaha community, to provide a better wine experience for the entire city of Omaha. I can't wait for you to check out this episode and get a ton of information.
Yeah, guys, this was an awesome episode. And then just a quick plug really quickly. If you get any value out of this podcast, you like watching it, the only way we're ever going to grow is organically. Comment, subscribe, share it with a friend if you get any value from it, because it's kind of cool. It's the only thing I've seen that's like local business owners here in Omaha. We really appreciate it. Without further ado, let's get into the podcast.
Baked even.
Yeah, like getting surveyed.
It was just weird. Yeah. You know, it was one of those things.
Hey,
be patient.
Yeah, be patient.
Yeah, that's the thing on commercial real estate that I've learned is stuff like takes forever to go and then people will back out at the last minute.
It's wild.
It is wild. Yeah. It's almost gross.
Well, and it was in the timing of it all, right? Because
we're all copyright.
Okay, cool.
It's overall now?
Yeah.
Sweet.
Cool. The timing of it all was something that was crazy too, because we got it right before the rates went up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's
perfect. I mean, it was like boom, closed, rates went crazy.
Dude, that's awesome.
So we got the ground locked, and you know, commercial rose every 5 years. So, yeah. But still we locked late enough
that
we still have 4 more years if we wanted to wait before that has to refi.
Yeah.
So we're just putting chunks down,
yeah,
getting equity built up to use that to finance the construction.
Yeah.
Loan.
Yeah, perfect.
So it's, yeah, the timing was just wild.
I think the commercial real estate space, to me, like the grass is always greener stuff. People in residential, a lot of people I've always talked to, like, oh, commercial, where it's at? Commercial's where it's at, because, you know, whatever, they're bigger, mm-hmm. It's bigger money. People go into it, but I'm like, God, everything I've seen in commercial seems stressful. Yeah. You're like,
I'll tell you what, they don't
spend 2 years and it can fall through.
Yeah.
Like you said, there's been years.
Well, that's just it. And you have to. Going back to what we were talking about before, is you have to be quiet.
Yeah. Very quiet.
Everything. Very you quiet. Can't, because if you say something to someone else or the wrong person, next thing you know, all of a sudden the seller may go, yeah, we're out. Somebody just offered us $200,000 more.
Right. Still the wild, wild west in terms of transactions.
Yeah. Like, unless you have a super tight contract.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Don't know.
Super tight.
And see, we knew the ownership group.
Mm-hmm. So that made it easier probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot easier.
Oh, it was.
Relationships matter a lot.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. And then we figured that out too, because it's an old boys network.
It's an old boys network. Yeah.
It's monopoly money at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Sure. Yeah. I feel like it's probably that way in like every real estate market. Imagine how it's like in New York.
Every market, I think.
Oh yeah.
I think every industry. Every.
I always think about like New York or those giant towns. Imagine how like tight that group is.
Oh, I bet.
But it's like, you know, like if you're not in the group, it's like,
get like the figurehead, like Donald Trump sitting down with a bunch of his buddies.
Well,
And if they don't know, if they don't know who the guy is, like what are they trying to do? Mm-hmm. Are they trying to move in?
They'll bid him out of the shoe.
Oh yeah, they will.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I bet they crush him out of there.
Or they just won't offer it. Yeah. And then the other thing that I figured out is, you know, it's like any great business, right? You build a team.
Mm-hmm.
Well, part of that team that's in a lot of these real estate groups, commercials that I've figured out, is a lot of them, one of the legal is one of the owners, right? So mm-hmm. one of the real estate attorneys is part of the ownership.
Yeah.
So you're not paying that fee, right?
That's
part of the skin in the game for him.
It's interesting.
And then he gets in on deals.
Of course he does.
Yeah. That's all about
Probably when those attorneys or real estate, whoever is in the deal with you, if they're part of the ownership, they care a lot more too.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really going to pay attention to the little stuff.
Yeah,
help you in a big way. It's smart to do it that way.
It's kind of pivoting a little bit. Something I haven't talked to you about. So, you know, I've known you for a number of years now, but I was doing some reading the other day about the impact of COVID on small business, mm-hmm. specifically retail and restaurant and stuff. And I was kind of just, you know, we have talked plenty of times offline, but how did you guys pivot? And then the second part of that question is, where in relation was the wine delivery service, you know, coming to fruition separately, just lined up, kind of that whole thing. What did that, how was that? How did you guys navigate that and come out of that as all intents and purposes? I mean, stronger almost.
Yeah, so right away when we saw kind of what was happening, because we had our salon business. Mm-hmm. So with the salon business, you know, actively, you know, going, but it was considered health and human services, all part of that.
Salon was
they had to shut down, right? So they shut our salon down for 7 weeks.
Yeah.
Well, that was half of our income immediately just done. And then we had, my wife was pregnant and we had our daughter in April of 2020.
Oh, geez.
Right. So
we had ours in February of 2020. So yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. But then, you know, being half your income just got wiped off the table.
Right, you have a kid.
And so that was a complete, like everything, it was very unexpected. Yeah. So when they started shutting businesses down, I was like, well, this is a little concerning because, you know, if they shut our wine shop down or if they locked those doors because bars and restaurants got closed.
Yeah.
Right.
Like they were coming around checking.
Oh, yeah, they were.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are they really?
Yeah. Well, police department, they were sitting in our parking lot.
Yeah.
Watching, you know.
What a joke.
So, that's crazy. And you could jeopardize your cosmetology license if you were working during that time. And I think they did cite one gal when that happened. But so all that was going on, right? And I told my staff, I said, no matter what happens, I said, we're going to keep rolling. And the crazy as it would be, we had already started an e-commerce site, started the build of that a year prior
2018
to COVID starting.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And we started an e-commerce site. So that was in the fold and it was just about wrapped up. COVID hit. Mm-hmm. I said, you know what? E-commerce was new to all of us. And we obviously have all bought stuff online, but as far as us developing it and finding a company that was, you know, the coding, the dollars, the spend, all the things that go along with building an e-commerce site from a small business standpoint, mm-hmm. that you don't realize until you get into it.
Right.
And it's like anything, the cost, right? All those things. It was like, oh my God, like this is very expensive.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I said, you know what? We just spent the money. Forget it. Let's do it.
Yeah.
We turned it on, fired it up. I bought a van. All of this while COVID was happening.
Yeah.
And I said, we're going to drink out of a fire hose for a little bit. And we're going to just start this thing and see where it goes.
Did you guys push that?
You bought a van to deliver? Is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Did you end up like turning it on, like almost being forced to, like prematurely? Because like, well, we got to figure something out.
No, I just turned it on in the event that they would close our doors.
Okay.
In the event they locked the doors,
we had this.
We could still sell.
Yeah.
You know, could still sell.
Is your sales on your online platform equal to the store?
No.
Different?
No, it's not even close, really, to be honest with you. It's one of those things that it's like any new startup or any new business, you're trying to figure it out. Okay. Right. Yeah. So it's how do you drive traffic to it? And then at the same time, how do you get that traffic? How does it convert to sales?
Right.
Right. Because that conversion rate is what you want. I mean, it's how do you get that to translate into sales, because it's like the silent sales.
How do you monetize this?
Yeah, there's nobody there to educate them on the wine,
right?
Right, and like I said, again, building a site that has all the functionality that you need it to have to be able to convert things to a sale or just all the things.
Just out of curiosity, you have things like if someone scrolls over a wine, can you like click a little video explaining it? You guys
it
does. Like that?
There's tasting notes on there. Yeah, cool. So we thought through it all. I modeled it after a company that was already in the wine and spirit business, but it was a big wholesale company. So
that's cool,
obviously they have billions of dollars to spend on
sure.
You know, technology.
So they know what to do though, too.
We don't, but it was still new to them even developing that. Mm. So we definitely, modeled it after that just on a smaller scale.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also in turn, what I did is I said, well, if they shut our store down, where are we going to keep inventory for our e-commerce site? So what I did is then I started looking for warehouses. So I said, well, I'm going to need a place to put some wine if they shut this place down and lock the doors and tell us we can't be in here. I said, so I found a small warehouse that was heated and cooled. So,
and it's hard, and warehouse space is hard to find no more.
So it was temperature controlled. So then I did that. So then I signed a lease. But the caveat there was, so I already signed the lease paperwork. Well, then when I went to get the liquor license, because we're going to be storing alcohol in there, well, it was in the warehouse was actually in Sarpy County. Well, light industrial doesn't allow alcohol. So I had already signed the lease all while COVID, remember?
Yeah.
So everything was shut down. City council, there was nothing, there was nowhere or anywhere to really go figure out what was going on. You couldn't have meetings. Nobody was having
meetings. It was like email traffic over days.
Yeah, if you're lucky. And city council doesn't typically move fast, right? No, and neither does the liquor commission when you're trying to apply for things. But so all while already having signed a lease to a warehouse that I can't technically legally hold alcohol in.
Use it for your purpose.
Yeah, use it for the purpose. We could not get a liquor license.
So back up for a second, your commercial real estate agent or the people weren't asking for use of purpose. So like, and they're like, hey man,
they knew what we were doing, but nobody understood
the legality.
Light industrial, because industrial allows it, because all your wholesale warehouses,
that's it.
They're in Sarpy County.
Yeah.
So it didn't even cross anybody's mind.
Nobody's done it.
Yeah. Nobody.
You're the first.
No, we were the first.
So you applied for it eventually.
We applied for the license, but that didn't matter. I had to get the county rezoned.
Oh shit!
During that time,
yeah.
So we were having city council meetings via Zoom, and I was going in front of the city council to get light industrial rezoned to allow alcohol
in all of Sarpy County.
All of light industrial in Sarpy County.
Wow.
So now
you got it.
Yep.
Dang, that's pretty sweet.
It was crazy. I'm like,
that's crazy.
It's the neat thing about small businesses. You learn to do a lot of crazy things.
You learn on the avenues.
And you learn by drinking out of a fire hose. Mm-hmm. But I've never met and had to rezone a county.
Right.
Yeah. Where do you start with that?
Yeah.
All of your, you know, that's where your tax or your, real estate attorneys come in, right? That's what they do daily. They do.
Yeah.
It was just me. Wild. We had our attorney, but I just like,
I have nowhere to store this stuff. Can you
meanwhile, his garage is full.
Yeah.
And like he's trying to do it in the morning when nobody's out.
So it was, I mean, it was the craziest 3 years of our lives.
That's crazy.
I mean, all while having a child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of that going on.
Having another child. You have a child already there.
Yeah. I already had a little one. Yeah. And then our businesses got, well, one of them got shut down because of COVID.
Yeah.
Right. So then, but we did. And, you know, we were doing everything known to man. We were doing curbside. We were doing delivery. We had a warehouse. We were fulfilling out of there.
Creating.
It was the craziest time ever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wine club subscriptions, mm-hmm. You name it. And
did they ever shut you down?
No. And I think it was about 3 weeks in, we were deemed essential.
Because
grocery. Was deemed essential. See, and we had a hybrid license, so we could do both.
Got it.
So it was
freaking government.
Unbelievable. Yeah, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, how random, right?
Well,
yeah.
And think about how surreal, thinking back, the conversations like you and your wife were having to have. Her business was shut down. She doesn't know when they're going to open up. There's no pathway laid out for success.
The health and human and the health and human services was changing. They were moving the goalpost every day.
Every day.
So we had no idea what.
Just getting jacked around.
We didn't know what to do. We didn't know, you know, we would, you know, cosmetology in a good salon. I mean, you're one of the most sanitized places anyway.
Yeah.
Right. So we already are doing that, right?
Yeah.
We were already taking those measures before they even implemented any sort of cleaning or anything like that. We were already doing that.
And just you a quick plug for the, for, what's the salon?
LEA's
off 168th and Maple.
Correct.
Wonderful people in there, guys. That is Rick's wife, and her name is
Violet.
Violet. Mm-hmm. So you guys, she's a great owner operator and great technicians in there. So just have to, if you guys need a salon, they do male and female. So get in there.
Yeah, we have eight amazing stylists. Yeah. I mean, they do it all. They do colors. They do lashes.
Good vibe in there too.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Sorry,
there you go.
Yeah, I was just pumped. No, I am a self-service up here.
It buzzes?
For the quick trim.
Quick trim. Because I think about even for not having a brick and mortar business, the conversations my wife and I were having that time, I can't imagine having brick and mortar. That time was surreal, just what was going on.
Yeah, we like I said, nobody knew what was going to happen. Nobody knew what was going to do. Now, I will say, COVID was terrible in a lot of ways, but in our industry, in the alcohol business, it ended up being phenomenal.
Right.
Right. So
tough times. People want to drink.
Well, yeah, it was one bright side for our business with COVID was it definitely increased the revenue, increased the count, the traffic, which was odd because people literally were coming there just to get out of the house.
Right,
that makes sense. Because we were open.
Okay.
Right. So people were just coming in like going, oh man, I just want to talk. Yeah. I just want to have a conversation.
Yeah.
You know, so it was neat. You know, it was great to be able to be there and be an outlet for people, whether we were selling alcohol or not.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, everybody just wanted some human interaction.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, and again, we were taking all the measures we could, you know, wiping everything down and whatnot. But it was an interesting time. But thank God it did, because, you know, it helped float, because they didn't stop charging us rent.
Of course not.
Right.
Yeah.
They didn't stop charging us rent. So we still had to make all those payments while, you know, one business being shut down. Mm-hmm. And thank God our other side of our businesses, you know, they.
How long did they keep your salon shut?
7 weeks. And there was it just kept, like I said, it kept changing. Oh, you can be open. Well, maybe not. Then, you know, but you got to do this if you want to be open, and you have to be distanced this so far.
Right. Right.
Well, not every station in a salon is set up that way.
Right.
Again, luckily we were, but still at the same time, whether you were distance or not, you're still cutting someone's hair right over the top of them.
Right. I mean,
yeah.
You know, so there was no.
It's kind of like the fact, hey, pull your mask down when you're eating, but put it back up.
Yeah.
What are we
doing? Yeah. It was one of the things. I mean, it's one of the things. And I get it.
It's almost weird looking back. To oh, that all happened. Weird.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, I like almost forget that it all happened in a weird way.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, yeah.
Well, it was like everything was happening at light speed.
Yeah.
Right. Because they were getting more information.
And nothing was clear.
No, no, no.
Nothing was clear. And nothing made sense.
And I get it. It was the unknown.
Right.
And anytime somebody doesn't know what's going on, there's some fear in there, and nobody knew what was happening. But
right.
I think as things started to kind of evolve and they started to understand what was going on, I think that
7 weeks doesn't seem that bad for here.
No, because there was certain, like California was shut down for almost the whole year. I mean, yeah, they were shut down for a year. Yeah. They were closing businesses.
I'm sure heard of people literally just driving out of the state to go live somewhere else for a while. I mean, they had no idea.
Yeah. Well, see, I was in South Dakota at the time.
Yeah.
I was still living in South Dakota.
Lucky
so
you.
Yeah. During, I mean, they didn't really shut anything down.
Yeah. Ever. South Dakota, North Dakota were chilling.
Well, they, I think they shut down some like non-essential things, I want to say for like 7 days or 10 days. Mm-hmm. But I don't even remember that. Like, I'm like, did they? I can't really remember what they shut down or not shut down. Mm-hmm. But then like coming in, my biggest realization of like, oh yeah, this is actually happening is in April of 2021, me and my wife went to Arizona and it was still basically shut down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so we walked into a place and I got like reamed for not wearing a mask from this lady. And I was like, oh yeah. This is the other part of the world.
Yeah,
everybody else, you know.
Yeah,
South Dakota was like.
Yeah, we were pretty fortunate. I think in Nebraska, I mean, you know,
didn't seem like it was too bad here.
No, and I think the governor was looking at things from a common sense standpoint too. It's like, okay, which was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, because like I said, it could have been way worse.
Yeah.
For a lot of businesses, and that's why you started to see some of the restaurants that didn't pivot and didn't figure those things out. They just closed, you know, and then you throw the PPP in there and that whole thing was just
that was a mess too, huh?
It was, I can't even describe it.
Yeah.
It was just unbelievable. And you could see the people who did it right and the people who did it wrong.
Right.
You know, and used it the way it was meant to be used and the people that didn't.
Wiggled the system. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, completely.
I was going to say pivoting from this. What's the kind of, you talked to us a little bit about it, but what's the vision moving forward for your business?
So we're growing, which is great. It's where you want to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, you never want to be moving backwards. But at the same time, we're trying to do things with intent and we're trying to do things the right way and making sure fiscally we're being very responsible in how we do things. But there is some big things coming up. We did make a pretty big real estate purchase here over the last year and a half. So we're going to be expanding our business. We're going to be building out, we're going to be building our own freestanding building in the upwards of 12,000 square feet. It's going to be unbelievable for Omaha. We're so excited for our customers.
Oh yeah.
It's just going to be unbelievable. We can't wait to, you know, announce and show people what we're doing.
Yeah.
And
what do you think the timeline's like on that?
We are hoping to come out of ground back half of 2024, early 2025.
Okay.
Right now we're kind of just, things are in motion. Architecture is getting, you know, kind of wrapped up and done. But at the same time, we're trying to see what the rates are going to do and try to do things, like I said,
smart,
intelligently. It's just our wife, my wife and I, and we don't have, you know, we have to be very smart and strategic about how we start to come out, come move forward. Really.
Totally. That makes sense.
So you, so obviously we have a big vision coming up with a big, your own standalone space. I'm assuming maybe the salon will move over to that area as well.
Correct. Okay. And the salon is going to be beautiful. Yep. We've got some big plans for that.
Yeah.
There's going to be some expansion there as well. And, we could have a bay for rent. That's just one of those that's kind of up in the air right now.
Yeah.
But
how it all pans out.
But at the same time, I think we want to utilize the space for a lot of what we're doing and the vision for the growth moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And but we're definitely going to bring something to the city that they haven't seen.
That's cool.
I can say that.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, I just think it's going to be every customer's dream because it's something we've taken over the last 20 years and kind of just compiled all that information we get from customers. God, wish we had this. Mm-hmm. God, wish we had that. And compile that and then kind of built that into our design. So
backing up at the very beginning, I mean, you know, little Rick Planbeck walking around, you know, shuttling booze on carts and stuff. Talk about the beginning. I mean, like, there's a people, I think, lose sight of how long the journey is, you know? And maybe not even knowing what the end result is, but you start to come into some of our ideas, and the more you invest in where you're at, you start to see more opportunities. Talk about kind of the beginning of where you got your start before owning Old Vine Wine.
So my wife and I met, and she was, like I said, she's always been in the cosmetology business. She's been in hair for 20 some years.
Yeah.
And she's always owned her own business. So she's kind of, she was the risk taker, mind you.
She had that
dream. She had the risk factor. I was not. I was the
analytical. You had the pucker factor.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I was as puckered as you can get.
Yeah.
But I started in corporate America, so, you know, and I was on the wholesale side of the wine and spirits industry, and I started there, started in the street as a rep. I was calling on off-premise, which in wholesale, it's broke up in three channels. You've got C-stores, on-premise, off-premise. C-stores being convenience store? Right, or package, and then you've got on-premise being bar or restaurant, and then off-premise being grocery or big box.
Okay,
got it. Right? So all three channels, I was exposed to all of them, calling on them as a rep early on, and cut my teeth that way. Worked in warehouse as well, just as, you know, that was part of our training. I don't even think they do that anymore.
Right.
Where, you know, I think it's an OSHA thing, right?
Yeah.
Where it was like, we're not going to get that guy on a high stacker. There's no way, you know.
It shouldn't be right.
But it was great. I loved it because it was kind of the old days of, you know, you do everything, son. That's how this works. Mm-hmm. And you learn all facets of the business so that when you go out into the street, you can take that and say, okay, this is why you're having a problem, you know, Mr. Customer, and we can do things to alleviate that and make it better. So learning all facets of the business was huge because the three-tiered system is very interesting. And when people get into it, it's one of the few, you know, a lot of people buy from a supplier or a wholesaler or whatever to get their product to sell, but rarely did you have that three-tiered system where you have supplier, wholesaler, retail.
And Nebraska is unique in a sense, right?
It's an open state. Well, it's not unique in the sense almost every state has to buy from a wholesaler at some point, but some are government, like state run.
Okay.
Got it.
So, but at the same time, you can, and the way the market is now, it's unbelievable, but you can only buy certain brands from certain people. Where it's not like if I want to go out and shop, if I'm a builder and I want to go get nails, but this supplier has a way better nail and that nail never breaks, but this guy just has the cheapy nail and I don't want to use that because my competitor's using the better stuff.
Right.
But if that wholesaler doesn't let you buy the better nail, it puts you at a disadvantage.
And so there's blockades.
So they're allowed to do that.
Well, technically no, but it happens.
Interesting.
It happens. And it's more so kind of happening in the bourbon. Kind of in the bourbon area,
the niche.
There's all the terms because there are allocations, right? So there's these allocations, and everybody likes to use the allocations to leverage business.
That's why you see all these raffles all the time now.
Yeah. Well, you know, for instance, one of them being, you know, you'll hear it because everybody in bourbon world right now is chasing Pappy Van Winkle and all the Blantons and the Elmer T's and the Rock Hills. And I can go on, E.H. Taylor's. Yeah. But at the same time, not every store is set up that way.
Right.
Right. Not every retail store, or depending on what you are in the business, what your model is, not every business is set up to carry Fireball shooters. Right. Right? Our business is not that. We're kind of in that mid to premium to super premium space. I don't want to sell shooters, right? Because it's just not what
it's not your clientele. No. Nothing.
And it just doesn't add up. Not right. When you can buy, see, we're in an open state like this in Nebraska. Not when you can go buy shooters at every gas station. You can buy wine at every gas station.
Yeah.
Right. So there is so much competition in this market that you need to be different. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's one of
mile deep versus the mile wide.
You have to be very specific. But if you don't understand that wholesale side and you just want to go out, I'm going to open a liquor store or a restaurant or whatever the case may be, that's where the biggest frustration lies. It's not, business is always challenging no matter what you're doing. But at the same time, you throw the middleman in there and it actually adds a whole nother element to what you need to be. You have to understand how that works. Otherwise, you're not going to be competitive.
Or you could go into it and then realize you can't make it happen because of the middleman.
That's exactly right. Oh, and you're at a disadvantage.
Like, you couldn't go up and be like, hey, I'm going to open Bourbon Barrel. And all we sell is bourbon and whiskey. And all of a sudden, you're like, I can't get enough product.
Yeah, you can't get, you're going to be a bourbon, you're going to be a high-end bourbon store, but you can't get high-end bourbon. How's that work?
Right.
Yeah. You know,
because of the allocations.
Absolutely. Everybody thinks they're going to open a store. Well, I'm just going to get Pappy Van Winkle and I'm going to get E.H. Taylor and I'm going to sell Buffalo Trace and stack it to the ceiling.
And guess what?
You can't get it.
And that said business owner has this idea. And this goes back to the point which you learn this the hard way. You learn this the way of going about the process from soup to nuts.
Absolutely.
And somebody else being a bourbon connoisseur be like, well, I love bourbon. I'm going to open a bourbon store. Would never know that. Just like you rented this industrial space.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, I can't put booze in it.
Yep.
Dude, that makes me think of something we've said so many times, which is like, everybody thinks things are so much simpler than they are.
No. Yeah. No.
Every space seems simple from the outside view. Like, I'll go open a liquor store, throw some bottles of bourbon and wine. You know what I mean? It seems so simple to everybody.
How much work did it take to make it look polished?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, diamond is a rock before it's on a ring.
Absolutely. On a
setting. It takes so much back end.
And we started it, and there's always different facets of business, right? And how you start it, you know, did you buy the business, right? Or did you start it from nothing? Was it, you know?
And you started from nothing.
Nothing. It was all dirt.
Did you ever think about buying out somebody?
It crossed my mind a few times because if you buy an established business that's 25 years in, all you have to do is, okay, where can we make this better?
Yeah.
Right. Where can we refine it? Where can we make it better? How's the traffic? Look at the numbers. Does it make sense? Are they profitable?
Right.
There's a lot of things in there, right, that you can refine and tune, but you're not trying to get, you're not selling people on your brand because it's already a brand, right? You didn't build it. You didn't start it. You didn't take the risk to build it from nothing, right? You bought a business, which is the risk is buying the business because you're still using money, right? But it's different than buying a business that's been around 27 years,
right?
And it's already got a following and it's already got a brand. I left a wholesale back, which I love the wholesale business. Don't get me wrong. But then as I was in it, right, and learned I worked my way up. I was managing portfolios towards the back half of my career. Mm-hmm. And I say that like I'm 58 years old. But at the same time, it was one of the things that was I was so fortunate to be able to do because I learned a lot about the wholesale pricing, building brands, what's it take to build a brand, all those different things you learn in phases of corporate America that all have – corporate America has – great training implementation. There's so many good things to take away from corporate America. I would highly encourage it if you don't want to worry about health insurance and investment, and you know, all that stuff you have to do and wear all those
hats.
There's
a reason corporate America does so well.
Absolutely.
Because it's so structured.
There's a piece of
figured
it
out.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I'm all in, you know, I liked it. I loved it. The camaraderie, I was an athlete. So I think that was one of the things, you know,
competition.
It's, correct.
What sport?
Wrestled in baseball.
Oh, awesome.
So, yeah. But, man, it's just amazing how some of it carries over. But when you're wearing all those hats, it's a different beast.
So, how old are you now?
47.
And you've had the Old Vine Wine and Spirits.
Going on 10 years. Yeah.
Did you go right out of wholesaling into that?
Yes.
Okay. So you,
I took the leap and.
So I would love to hear. So this is something that not many people talk about. The catalyst that changes in your season of life from being an employee, and then I'm gonna have this idea. I'm gonna put it down on paper, develop it, pitch it to somebody, bank, couple investors, maybe not. I pulled some money. Talk about the entity of that I'm gonna do this, and now I gotta figure this out, and all of a sudden, the name's on the wall on the front of this building, and I gotta go to work every day here.
Yeah.
What was that like? This development and then into fruition.
Going from a W-2 employee, it's scary.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I always throw it back to my wife, right? Had she not been the one that pushed me over the edge to do it, I wouldn't have done it. I'm too analytical when it comes to, I have to think through things too much, right? And what do they say? Analysis paralysis, right? Real. If you keep thinking about it, you're going to talk yourself out of it.
100%. You know where dreams going to die?
And
you think about them.
Yeah.
And your brain.
Too much. Yeah.
Absolutely.
The planning process.
Yeah, absolutely. You will talk yourself out of it. And almost every entrepreneur or anybody that has had started a startup or got into business for themselves, they will go through it. If they haven't, they're lying. Right. They've definitely, those thoughts have crossed their mind at some point. And when it really sets in, it's usually at about year 2 and 3 when you haven't taken a check yet. And you're just like, I haven't paid myself. How am I going to actually make money? Because what you really start to find out is how thin the margins are, right? Because they're razor thin.
Yep.
And most businesses,
especially in consumable goods.
Yeah. Tend to be, groceries running on super thin margin. But at the same time, the thing is you have to figure out, how do I make this a profitable and viable business? Because at year 3, and when you haven't taken a check yet, you start questioning your ability, right, to be able to do that. Mm.
Is there a big shift, do you think? You just talked about being an employee, a consumer of goods, and then also a business owner. I would venture to bet, and I think I'm kind of going through this at times too, when you're trying to barter for services and goods, how expensive it is to run a business. Like, people don't realize things cost as high as they do because the progress of a business is being profitable.
Yeah. That's the whole point. Right? Profit is not a bad word.
No.
And
it doesn't mean you're greedy.
No. When people come in, and that's the one thing about a small business owner, as you figure out, is people won't question a pair of Jordans for $150 or whatever they are for a pair of shoes. But if you come into this establishment and you know that person, they're like, is that little, they start checking Vivino and start checking, all the different things as well. Your price is a little off and a little different here. Well, they're not even thinking about what they're saying, right? It's like, well, I might make $3 on that bottle of wine. Then I have to pay somebody out of that. Right. I have to pay my rent out of that. Yep. Oh, and by the way, if you used a credit card, I have to pay a processing fee out of that. Yeah. So by the time that actually gets back to me, I might not have made anything.
Yeah.
Right? So those are the things people don't realize. Mm-hmm. So when they go buy from giant big box store, they're not thinking about, how does this help, the small guy?
Yeah.
Could that extra minute it might take to get to the small guy help this guy feed his family? Absolutely.
Right.
But they never question the $150 pair of Jordans.
Right. And tying that back to real estate, something people don't realize is, like, when you hear about the Vanguard, Black Rocks, and the main streets, they're buying these giant portfolios of houses. They don't care about making $100 a house profit because they're playing a volume game, just like the big boxers. They care about making half a cent per house.
That's right. That's right.
And they're going to go buy a million houses to make their profit.
That's right.
But it's totally cutting the legs off of this whole business owner, the entrepreneur who wants to go try to have not just a job, but a business for his family, and maybe something to leave to another generation, maybe something that he can use to leverage it up. I mean, these giant companies that have become conglomerates are really cutting the legs off the small guy, and they don't, we're being conditioned to drive prices down. It's a race to the bottom. But reality is, things cost money.
You ever read Sam Walton's book?
I haven't, no.
That's pretty interesting because the whole drive prices down, Amazon did this too. In his book, basically, he talks about how they kind of, Walmart was famous for going into small towns and basically shutting down small businesses.
That's where the neighborhood market came in.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. The reason that happened is he said, we're going to go in and we're just going to take a loss on everything.
Yep.
Just to drive them out.
Amazon's doing the same
Amazon
thing.
Did that.
Total Wine will do the same thing.
But they don't do it anymore. Now, so they switched from that model. Mm-hmm. Once everybody's out of business, they just rose the prices to where they already were before.
Yep. Amazon did it too. As well on the, on the gas stuff.
And the other game.
Isn't that crazy?
The other savage. Well, yeah, it's retail wizardry.
Yeah.
Right?
It's smart. It's smart business move, but it's savage.
It is. Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing people don't realize when they're not, again, they're not thinking through purchases. And I get it. Like when you want to get something, you just go buy it quick and you want to get out of there.
Yeah.
But and my wife and I do our best to support local small businesses, whatever it is. We'll go shop there before we need something major, right? Always. Yeah. We always do that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, your Total Wines of the world or your Costco's of the world, and Costco's great. But at the same time, they run 10% over the cost of goods.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to compete with that. No, they're not getting better pricing. They just run 10% over the cost of goods. So they're Kirkland brands, right? They're private label, and Total Wines mastered this as well. They're private label brands. They'll always put them right next to a big name, right? Kirkland, right? What's put next to Crown Royal? Mm-hmm. They'll put Kirkland Canadian whiskey right next to Crown Royal. Well, if it's $8 cheaper, that consumer goes, well, for $8 less, I'll try it.
Yeah.
I'll try it. And if they get it home and it's like, well, tastes that was pretty decent.
Well, the second cup, well, guess what? Tastes basically the same thing.
Guess what? I just saved $8.
Yeah.
But in reality, their margins are way higher on private label.
Totally.
Private label's always going to work that way. So they funnel people to private label. Their toilet paper, no matter what, there's always Kirkland. And if you look at it, it's sitting right next to a big name brand.
Sam's Choice.
Because it's right-hand pull of a big name brand. Because the consumer's eye works from left to right. Right? So you naturally, just like reading, you go from left to right. When you shop, watch yourself. You go from left to right. Right? And you're going eye level on a shelf. You really are going to look at the bottom. And what they'll do is they'll strategically place things on a shelf to gravitate that consumer to the private label.
Dana, is your mind blown yet?
Like I said, it's everything seems so simple on the outside. They're just stocking shelves, but nothing is simple.
But everything's thought out. Yeah. What our goal and what I don't like it to just sit and beat up, you know, the big box
retail. Screw Costco.
They have their place, and I love the traffic they bring.
Yeah.
I love it. You know, 100%. Eyeballs past your store is great.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's just something to keep in mind. Mm-hmm. And that's what I always try to educate people on. But what we do is we've educated our staff, myself. We have a great staff. They're unbelievable. Rachel, Shelley, all of them, Jamie. They're amazing at what they do. And we've trained them to essentially educate our customer. We're not selling anything. We want to educate you, create an experience to where when you come in, you are just like, oh my God, I didn't realize why I like that wine. Mm-hmm. That now I understand why I like it or I don't like it. Right. So we are trying to create an educational experience to where so when someone comes in, they know every time they're going to get a great bottle of whether it's whiskey or wine or what have you. Mm-hmm. Tequila, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. We carry it all. But at the same time, we want to educate you, not sell you anything. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've prided myself on that since day one. I've been in the business 20 years. I've been over this 20 some years now. I've been doing this. But that's my goal is to get and educate customers and create an amazing experience.
And I think people start to anchor. I guess I'm speaking for myself. I anchored having a bottle of wine to relaxing and having a good conversation every time.
Yeah.
I don't really drink a glass of wine by myself very often. I usually hate my wife and I will sit down, open a bottle of wine, and we'll have a chance to have a talk through our day or what's going on in a very, I want to say safe space, you know, where, you know, we're just trying to connect. And I love that.
Absolutely. And that's what wine and all fairness for the most part, but wine in general is, and it's an experience. And that's what you want it to be. It's a talking piece. It's, you don't want to sit down, you want to drink it, you want to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And another thing since COVID, you know, that's one thing that we've noticed in the category and in the industry is people are buying better wine. They're buying better spirits, right? The overall wine category as a whole is down a little bit, you know, percentage wise, but people are buying better wine. So the premium piece of the business has actually increased, but the overall category is down, you know, and there's some migration into seltzers and high noons and you name it. And if you think about what you've been buying, cocktails, pre-made, ready to drinks, all those things, people have shifted and changed some things. But overall, people have started to buy better wine in general, and they never went back to buying the cheaper, you know, under 15 category. Yeah, it's hard to go back.
It's like once you fly first class, how do you go
first? Oh, it ruins you. It ruins you. And I've never been able to do that. But my wife got lucky and was able to do that. And she was like, I was like, well, don't get used to this sweet. It'll never happen again. But you know, it's great. We love it. We love the people. We love the customers. And that interaction is what it's all about. And that's why you do it. And, you know, not every day is a great day. And your customers help bring the good side out of it. You know, people come in to see the wine guy. They're happy.
Did you, in the process of getting the store open, did you get rejected ever? You're like, nope, we're not going to back you on this. Like, you had to find the right fit?
No, that was one thing. So we were going back to that question.
Yeah.
You get good at writing business plans, right? That's one thing banks want to see if you're going to get financing, right? Yeah. And we don't like to be over leveraged. That was one thing we're very cautious of. Yeah. We're again, going back to that, you don't want to over leverage yourself, but, banks, you got to have a good business plan if you're going to do that. And we've been pretty lucky to be able to do enough of them that you get good at your business. And once you know the numbers and know your business, that's very important because that's what they want to see. I mean, I would even whittle it down to, I need to sell this many bottles per day at this price to make our monthly note.
Right.
Right. So you get it down to even that.
Makes sense.
Survival rate.
Correct. Mm-hmm. You have to know those numbers. You know, you have to know your margins. You have to know where you're going to be. But again, that's where it gets tricky too with the wholesaler in the middle, because there's ways to buy and there's certain things you do to enhance those margins to help, run and operate your business, but you just have to do that.
Yeah. I mean,
if you don't know that side of the business, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Cause it is not easy. And like I said, and competition's just getting thicker.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think too, the idea that, you know, being a business owner, people lose sight of the fact that when you're a sole proprietor, you might as well call it Rick's in the beginning, right? I mean, cause it was your baby.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're like, well, I'm also the shop manager. I'm also the product manager. I'm also the sales manager. I'm also the pseudo accountant. I'm also the delivery manager. I'm also a customer service man. When you're opening a business and you're an entrepreneur, you wear all the hats.
Yep.
And you're not getting paid for any of them.
Absolutely.
Right.
You don't have you don't have HR. You don't have that to fall back on. You don't have all those things. There's a dynamic shift there, and that's usually when you start to figure it out is, you know, you have to go from where I was in corporate America, where I was managing sales teams and whatnot, and then became portfolio management. That being said, now you have to go and turn your owner hat on.
Yeah.
So that's where profit comes in, right? When you have to look at everything. Where, you know, what pencils are we using? What pens are we using? Yeah. You know, with all those little things add up, and it comes down to that. I mean, I think, I don't know if it was Union Pacific or Mutual, somebody did a study where they literally, and I use that example because it was literally a business study, it was a case study. They made a pencil chain. They went from like felt tip to Bic,
right?
It was something like that. And it saved them over $1 million.
Wow.
Because you think of all the floors and all the office staff, and it saved them $1 million by changing what pencils or pens they were
buying. Yeah, I totally
agree. There was a similar thing done. A high school kid did a study on changing the government's font on paper from a size 12 to a 10.5.
How much ink it saved?
Saving them billions of dollars on paper usage.
Paper and ink.
The government didn't change
ink, I bet.
But of course it would have changed. Still legible, still readable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. When you're dealing with volume, that is a differentiator for sure.
It makes a huge difference. Yeah. And obviously, I mean, we're not anywhere near that scale,
but
a little change like that, you know, and all those different things
it goes from $1 million to saving you $5,000 even.
Yeah. And that's a huge bit. You know, that's a rent.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's rent.
Yeah. A good example would maybe be like, you know what, I'm gonna clean the facility for the next year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now instead of paying $175 a week or $250 a week, now I'm pocketing that, and that is not an expense I have to worry about $1,200 a month.
Well, and that's just it. It's like I said, it's all those little things that you never had to worry about as a W-2.
Yep.
Right. And that's where and sometimes you have to have those tough conversations with yourself or maybe with your staff.
Yeah.
Right. There's certain things that you typically would never have to deal with as a W-2 employee.
Yep.
And that is the one thing that where you just learn to navigate those waters, and you get better at them the more you do it. Right. Yep. And it's just one of those things. And sometimes I think that's been the, I guess the growth for me, right. Is switching from manager hat to owner hat.
Yeah. Big difference.
Right. Huge difference. Cause payroll, I mean, you think payroll, that's one of your biggest threats in retail. It's inventory and payroll.
Yeah.
That's your two biggest threats right there. And one of those things is, and I always use this rule and I've learned it, and I'm not making this up, yeah. but, I think it was last time I looked to pay somebody $50,000 a year, you have to do about $250,000 in revenue.
100%. That makes sense.
Right? Say that one more time.
So to pay an employee $50,000 a year,
yep.
you have to do about $250,000 in revenue.
I believe it. Yeah.
Maybe more. Maybe a little more.
Maybe more. Yeah.
Maybe a little more.
Wow.
And so that's just something to
those
think.
Those are big numbers for most people. They don't
understand. For a small business, for sure.
Yeah. That's a lot.
That's a bit, and I'm talking that's per employee,
right?
Yeah. Not
per employee making that.
That's for one person.
Mm. Yeah,
and no, those are the things, like I said, that I think consumers you don't realize is it's like, man, every little thing helps. Don't ever think that
opening at 11 versus 10.
Yeah,
That's a big deal.
Yeah,
selling product at 10.
Exactly.
Start to say all that kind
of. Yeah, thing. Or I just need one bottle. I'm just going to run to Hy-Vee. No, go to this. That one bottle makes a difference for us,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
I don't care whether you buy a case or a bottle. It doesn't matter. For us, everything helps.
Any one thing that comes to mind, you know what you don't get when you go to Hy-Vee?
Hmm.
When you leave the store and you buy your six-pack of wine, in that little carton or any grocery store, hey, thanks for coming in today.
Yeah.
You go to a small business, majority of the time, as long as the owner's not disgruntled that day,
yeah.
they're like, hey, thanks for shopping with us today.
Yeah.
You know why? Because he's still able to put his kid through private school.
Yeah.
You know why? Because she's still able to put her kid in dance
yeah.
and enjoy that. You know, they still get it. They're still on track to making that vacation as a family.
Yeah.
That is not happening at the big store. So if that resonates, that kind of just an aha moment for me is like, your lifeblood is in the individual transaction because it's the small things that make the big things. That's a snowball effect.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for the consumers out there, you think about when that person says, thanks for shopping with us today, what they're really saying is, thanks for supporting my dream today.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, true. And our big thing is, I mean, we want to pay everybody a lot of money, right? That's the thing is, I want to take care of my employees the way they would want to, the way I would want to be treated. That's the other thing. But to be able to do that, all that stuff's got to be in sync, right? Because you can't, that's the hard part, right? You can't, at the detriment of your business, you have to think about that before you start,
right.
Totally. Paying all those kinds of dollars.
Question for you with being, what would you say be like one or two things that came really naturally for you in this? And then like another couple of things you're like, this is still banging my head against the wall. Like I'm still struggling to be able to get my hands around this and feel really comfortable about this part of being a business owner.
I think it all goes back to it's always the shocking part of how much revenue you actually have to do to take anything home.
Yeah.
That is the one part for me mm-hmm. that still is mind boggling. And all the tax and all the costs that come out of everything mm-hmm. that are just like, wow. It is the biggest eye opener. For me,
mm-hmm.
like I said, my wife's a little more seasoned or weathered when it comes to that because she understands.
Well, they don't have as much overhead either.
They don't know their business, their model is different than ours, right? So mm-hmm. ours is completely different when it comes to that. Mm-hmm. But it's a shocking thing when you look at, I would say, I mean, just our credit card processing fees alone are enough to pay our rent.
Yeah.
And that's the thing right there. I mean, and all that comes out of your bottom line.
Right.
So whether your margins are 30% or 25% or 15%, you still have to factor just the processing fees. I'm not talking payroll. I'm not talking rent. I'm not talking anything else.
Just to make money move.
That is just to make the money.
Mm-hmm. So that you would say is the recognizing, hey, this is not emotional. This is business. I got to move product.
Correct.
So then the other question is, I don't think people understand, and I think I'd be interested to know, you probably know on average how many bottles of wine you have on the floor.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
We have 2,000 SKUs of wine alone.
That's wow. a lot. Yeah. So how often are you turning over inventory?
I'm pretty anal about
that. Interesting.
I watch vintages like a hawk. There's a reason we're skewed the way that we are from reds versus whites and the quality of wine that we have. Mm-hmm. We turn over inventory, I'd say probably once every 3 months, which is
completely all new.
I would say most of it.
Cool.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
For the business we're in, for our model, mm-hmm. right? Because grocery's different. You're selling $4.99 wine all the time. You're rolling through Apothic and whatnot left and right. Yeah. But at the same time, it's just a different model. But I'm just very anal about that, and I'm always watching vintages on our wine, how it, at the rate that it's selling. And if there is something that's maybe sitting for a little while, then I'll look at it and say, okay, is this wine okay to sit? Is this wine going to get better with some time? Mm-hmm. Is this, I look at all those factors too. So
you're in that higher.
Correct. Premium. Correct. So as those wines should, and actually.
Well, and they appreciate. Some of them do.
Yeah. It actually does some good for those wines to sit.
It's very rare to have consumables that appreciate.
Yeah.
And wine is one of those things.
Correct.
You buy a Stag's Leap from 2012 vintage, all of a sudden it doubled in price over 4 years because of that vintage was so good. And you don't even know it until over time about the review of it.
Well, and the funny thing is, if you look at some, I don't know. I don't look at it as an investment. I drink it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there is some studies out there that I think art and wine were up in the top 10 for actual investments, which was interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. I think you could fact check me on that, but I'm pretty sure they're up there.
Mm. That's pretty interesting. I never thought of that before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there is. I've seen wines where we have had allocations of wines that we were offered that were some of the best wines coming out of Burgundy, which is Pinot Noir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or Chardonnay. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, some of those wines, at the rate that we've purchased them, right, you look at them, what they're doing on the market a year later, and they've doubled or tripled. Mm-hmm. A year later.
Wow.
And a lot of that is just due to the availability of being able to get them, but then the quality of it.
Yeah.
Something that I think that's obviously evident as a business. Not only do you own a storefront, brick and mortar business, but you are, you hear about the terminology of sommelier, but you are an expert of wine and wine consumption and sales. That's your passion profession. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, have you thought through, your kids are getting older, they're going to be involved in more stuff, time, balance, harmony of life. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about the idea that, I'm Rick, I'm kind of the secret sauce. What happens if I don't go to work for, a few days, or if I start cutting out a half day so I can be with my kids more? How do I keep that mojo in the business?
My goal, and I think my staff would probably tell you this too, my goal has always been, let's get them in a position to be better than me.
Yeah. Your staff.
My staff.
Okay.
Absolutely. Cool. I'm not a management freak. I don't need to micromanage our staff. As long as, things are getting done and we can see that the numbers are where they need to be. My goal was always to replicate me.
Hmm. Yeah.
Right. I even did that in wholesale. I love it when I look back and I see some guys that I've worked with in the past or some of the team that I used to manage back then. And I look at them now and they're in those management roles. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love to see people that I've either trained or worked with do better than me. Mm-hmm. That's always been my goal. Mm-hmm. And that's how it is for everybody. I mean, everybody that I've managed, I would love for them to be that person and to get to where they want to be. Mm-hmm. And that's been my philosophy. So I can leave the store, right? And I don't have to worry about, oh my God, is it being done the way I need it to be? Yeah. Is it, they don't have to do it exactly the way I would do it.
Their own flavors
on. But yeah, but just, I just want them to have the knowledge to be better than me.
Yeah.
That's what I've always strive for. And I've done that throughout my whole career. And I think that's why it's always worked.
Well, I think that's a great highlight or spotlight on leadership versus management. Mm-hmm. And kudos to you, Rick, for having that philosophy, because there's really two ways to win. You either build up or you tear down and be the last one standing. And I think you're going on the concept, how am I going to build everybody up around me? It's all rising tides raises all ships. That's how we win. And you don't create enemies, you create allies.
Yeah.
You know?
And
true.
We've always done that. I mean, my wife, perfect example. She operates the same way. I mean, we've had gals that have, you know, rented from us in the past, and now they've went off to open their own salons.
Love that. Yeah.
I mean, and that's happened twice.
Yeah.
Twice. And we've gave them the knowledge. We've helped them with business questions. Yeah. We've encouraged them to do it. Right. So we're not ones to hold people back. We, again, to your point, we want to build them up. Mm-hmm. If we want people that want to be with us, mm-hmm. right? We want them to love to come to work. We want them to enjoy being there, because customers feel that.
Yeah. Oh, right? It's energy.
Customers totally feel that. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing we've always strived to do is, again, doesn't matter what side it is, whether it's salon, whether it's in the wine industry, what we've always tried to build up our people. Mm-hmm. And because we want them to be better than us, mm-hmm. you know, it's just like your kids.
Yeah.
You want the best for your kids and you want them to be better than you.
I always I've been thinking about like having daughters.
Yeah.
It's my role to teach my daughters what a man looks like. Like I said, the only men I ever want to be better than me is the man my daughters marry.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like, sure. That's, yeah. You know, yeah. That's the thought process in that.
Yeah.
Like,
hey. Good point.
Yeah.
So, well, that's cool, man. I give me other questions.
No, man, I just appreciate you coming. It's actually been cool to learn about the inside of that industry, because every industry is so unique.
Yeah.
It has its own little parts of it that are like fascinating to me. So appreciate you coming.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
You guys have been the number one store in Omaha.
Four years in a row. Yeah.
Little shop out in West Omaha. People didn't think there was really that, you know, any place to go buy good wine out in West. And I always pump it and rep it with Rick Planbeck's Omaha Wine, Beer and Spirits. Old Vine Wine and Spirits, excuse me. Old Vine Wine and Spirits. And thanks for coming on, man. It's been awesome.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, appreciate it.